Hey guys, it's Chris. Before we get started, I just wanted to drop in and mention a few things here. The main one being that our podcast is officially 1 year old, so happy birthday to us. We brought this up when we recorded this episode, but there was a ton of stuff I wanted to say that I forgot, and some of it was pretty important. So I had to take that section out of the episode, and I'm just going to throw in all that info here, and I've got a checklist to make sure that I don't miss anything this time. So for starters, I obviously want to thank Donna and Carlos for being a part of this. They have added so much to the show and helped it become so much more than I could have imagined. So huge thanks to them, and a huge thanks to all of you, all of our listeners. Our subscribers and the number of downloads has grown steadily episode to episode, and we're really, really excited about that. And we've been receiving some really nice emails and messages on Facebook, and it's sort of weird, but also really cool that the three of us sometimes talk about you guys like we know you. Like, oh, hey, did you see what so and so posted on our wall? Like, oh man, typical Jerry. I don't know who Jerry is. That's not a real guy. I mean, there might be a Jerry who listens to our show, but he's not on our Facebook page. What the hell, Jerry? I thought you were a fan. Get your shit together. But no, seriously, thank you guys so much. And I know Donna and Carlos would want me to extend their thanks to you as well. This has been so much more fun than I could have anticipated, and a big part of that is all of you. And if you're wondering what to get us for our birthday, I know anniversary is the more appropriate term here, but birthday sounds more fun. So if you're wondering what to get us, and I think it's a pretty safe bet that you weren't, well, I will tell you anyways. So this is inspired by our most recent iTunes review, which I believe was left by our listener, Tyler. And what I loved was that he started by referencing Donna's line about, I remember loving this movie. That's how his review started. And so here's what I want to try. In that spirit, if you could leave us a review on iTunes and find some way to work in one of our running jokes, or really any sort of reference to the show, we'll read our favorite ones and give you a shout out on future episodes. We're not going to read the entire review because that would probably be a little weird for us to do, but just enough to show how you worked in the reference. And the slyer, the better. So that's the call to action. And if this goes well, I would like to try and put together some sort of listener appreciation segment that we can do every once in a while. Well, just a few things to keep in mind, though. Sometimes it takes a while for new reviews to show up on iTunes, so we might not see it straight away. And on top of that, we sometimes already have a few episodes in the bank just sort of waiting to be released, so it might not come up in the very next episode that you hear. But I promise if you leave them, we will see them and we will acknowledge them. And speaking of acknowledgement, I want to give another shout out to another one of our listeners. D. Lewis Martin has been incredibly supportive of us, and so I want to send some love his way. He has a podcasting network called Liberty Street Geek, and they have some really, really great shows. I know Donna listens to a lot of their Game of Thrones recap episodes, and I listen to the sci-fi movie episodes. You can find them on Stitcher and iTunes, and the website is libertystreetgeek.net. I think that's it. We have a Twitter page now, or we should by the time you hear this. Carlos is going to take the reins on that, so go ahead and follow us there if you want to. We'll throw a link up on the site, but it's at HDYR Podcast. And then, oh, really quick, I guess I wanted to say that, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but we have stopped doing these remotely. We've tried to record more episodes where we're all in the same room together. Part of the problem with doing that, though, is I know there's been some like background noise or what sounds like us fumbling with the microphone sometimes. That's actually not the case. It's that we're recording in a room with wooden floors, and anytime it just reverberates a lot. And so I know it's really annoying. I've been trying to take as much of it out as I can. I can't get all of them though. So no one has said anything yet, but if you're wondering, we're working on that. We've got some ideas on how to fix that from here on out. Now that's like all you're going to notice in this episode. So you're welcome. And then Okay, so this I probably don't even need to bring up, but I want to because I think it's hilarious. So in the last episode, the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids episode, the intro for that one where, you know, the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids was released in 1989. I had to record that part after we had done the rest of the episode. And it was about a week later, and I was really under the weather, and I had like a sore throat, and so my voice was a little lower and kind of scratchy. And then I tried to sync it up to the initial recording, like right at the part where I go, Donna, what do you remember about Honey, I Shrunk the Kids? And the transition was so jarring. I should have just recorded me saying, you know, Donna, what do you remember, with my sicky, sick horse voice. But I didn't. I didn't have the foresight to do that. So instead, what I thought would be a great idea was to just lower the pitch of my voice in the recording when I say, Donna, what do you remember? And when I was listening to it, I was like, oh, perfect. Yeah, it's a seamless transition. Now when I hear it, it sounds like when somebody does an interview on Dateline or 2020 and they want their identity disguised, like, you know, like, oh, he always seemed like such a nice man. Like, that's totally what it sounds like when I ask Donna what she remembers about the movie. So if you didn't catch that, go back and listen to it. It's ridiculous. Okay. Wow. That was an intro, huh? Let's get on with this. Thank you guys again so, so much. Keep the comments and suggestions coming. Happy birthday to us. Thank you, Donna and Carlos. You guys are wonderful. And enjoy the episode. Hey, do you remember Labyrinth? Hello, and welcome to Hey, Do You Remember?, a show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up. I'm Chris.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carlos.
And today we're revisiting Labyrinth. Labyrinth is a 1986 fantasy adventure film that stars Jennifer Connelly as Sarah, a 15-year-old who prefers to live with her head in the clouds since her home life is so unbearably tiresome. After wishing that goblins would kidnap her whiny baby brother Toby, she's confronted by David Bowie's cock bulge. Bowie plays the goblin king Jareth, and he makes a deal with Sarah. He'll return Toby to her if she can solve his labyrinth in 13 hours. The film was the second collaboration between Jim Henson and conceptual artist Brian Froud. The pair had previously worked on The Dark Crystal, and in the wake of that film's release, Froud presented Henson with a series of sketches he'd done featuring a baby surrounded by goblins. From there, no less than 25 drafts of the script were written, and despite the three-year pre-production phase, it was only in the last few weeks before filming began that all of the elements finally fell into place. Labyrinth received mixed reviews upon its release, and it was considered a box office disappointment. Henson was so demoralized by its failure that he never directed another movie, and his son Brian remembers this time as one of the most difficult in his father's career. Although Jim passed away in 1990, he lived long enough to see the beginnings of a cult following for both Labyrinth and The Dark Crystal. The film has transcended its humble beginnings to become a beloved classic that each generation enthusiastically shares with the next. Many have acknowledged its debt to stories like The Wizard of Oz or the works of Maurice Sendak, but can Labyrinth really stand toe-to-toe with those giants of the genre, or is it simply a serviceable knockoff greatly elevated by nostalgia? We'll get into all of that and more in just a second, but first, Donna, what do you remember about Labyrinth?
Almost nothing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Carlos?
Something. So I definitely did not see this as a child.
Is that the opposite of loving this movie? I did not see this.
I didn't even know it was a thing, honestly. And then when I was going to art college, a bunch of my friends in a show got wind that I'd never seen Labyrinth, and it was like, stop the presses! And we had a whole night, and I actually am still friends with some of these people, and asked last night, I was like, hey, do you remember that time we all watched The Labyrinth. What was that? Do you remember all this stuff? So we all went over. It was like probably 10 of us went over to somebody's apartment, and I'm sure we were drinking, etc.
I'm interested in the etc.
I listened to your podcast.
Nachos. It was nachos.
No one looked.
Nachos. Nachos. Hold the meat, extra
Hold
cheese.
The meat, extra cheese, nachos. But I was blown away. My mind was absolutely blown by it. I did feel that there was so much nostalgia around me, and everyone was like singing along with the songs. Hmm. I mean, this was like a huge movie for all of these art school people who had grown up with it. And I was watching it and was like, well, I really get why my parents did not take me to see this. Like, just trying to explain it alone. Cause, you know, you're a kid and you ask questions and you're like, but why does the goblin go right under us? Bathing suit part. Like, I'm like, they didn't want to take me to that at all. No, no. My parents aren't real, like, fantasy people anyway, oh. So it was, like, real easy to skip this one, even though I always loved Jim Henson. So, but it was certainly entertaining watching it then, which is about 10 years ago, and I watched it. That's the second time I watched it for this. Wow. It's a great movie.
That's her convincing herself.
Yeah. Yeah. Just let her trail off.
She just said yeah no four times. Yeah no, yeah no, yeah no.
Carl, what about you?
I have also only seen this movie twice. But the first time I was a child, I want to say it was like a day camp setting. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I know that there were a lot of children, so I figure it was either school or day camp, and I feel like it was like day camp, and it was probably raining, so we had to stay inside, and, hey, I have this creepy movie, let's watch this. And that was the day camp counselor. I don't know what his name was.
Certified in
let's
something.
Say it was Katie. hey, kids, it's me, Katie. Let's watch this movie. yeah, so what I remember of it, it's actually just more images. I remember looking out the, like, when she looks out her window and she can see, like, the world has changed outside of her window. And I remember, you know, seeing the labyrinth painting, you know, matte painting, all the way up to the castle. I remember the walls, not being what they seem, quote unquote. But then I kind of remember things that are not from this movie. Oh. Like, the whole time I was watching, I was like, where's the guy who is, like, this is going to be really stupid because it ends up being from the Neverending Story. But I'm like, where's the guy who's made of rocks who's like a rock guy? I was like, oh, wait, that's totally Neverending Story. And I was like, this is, he's never coming to help her. He doesn't exist in this canon. And yeah, I remembered obviously David Bowie because how can you forget? I wish he would have worn a costume for this, though. I feel like he just rolled out of bed and made this movie. It's really more just like visceral images. I didn't remember much of the plot other than she had to get to the castle to get her brother, but I didn't remember being misled or like any other characters met on the way that weren't from the Neverending Story or a Tin Man. And I did know that it was Jennifer Connelly, but only because someone told me that much later on, because I would not have known who Jennifer Connelly was the first time I saw it.
Oh,
and other than that, I remembered nothing. So watching this was a real experience.
Where are they going?
Great movie.
Okay, so the first time I saw Labyrinth, I was really, really, really young, like maybe 3 or 4 years old. And I had very, very hazy memories of it. And I spent years trying to find this movie that I saw, like a babysitter, like brought it over for me and my sister to watch. And I found out later it was Labyrinth, but for the longest time I didn't know what this film was, and my memories of it were wrong. So like, I was searching for this movie. I would ask people, like, it's, you know, there's like this girl and she falls out of the sky and she lands in this like fantasy world, and like the ground looks like a quilt, or like, you know, like it's got like a pajama pattern to it. And then there's like some woman at like a, some sort of like lemonade stand looking thing, but she's a puppet. And then there's like a giant pink elephant. And then like her and this elephant and this bird, they go on this adventure. And I had snippets of this. These images in my head, and I didn't see the movie again until I was 20, 21. So I bought the DVD, I threw it on, and that whole thing of like, sometimes when you come to things too late, you just don't get it. Like, I have a lot of friends that don't get the Goonies because they didn't see it till they were adults. Mm-hmm. I was just talking to someone really recently about, you know, this whole thing where you're trying to force yourself to like something. Because I feel like Kristen has never seen The Goonies. There's a lot of movies we watched together that she had not seen up until I required her to watch them.
You must watch them.
And some of them she gets, and some of them it's just sort of like, I just think I missed the boat on this one. It just wasn't the right time. I've actually been so I just went through this with, you guys know that band The National?
Yeah.
Like, so a lot of people people who I think have really good taste, they all love this band. And I was like, okay, what's the deal with this? This feels like something I should like. I'm a white guy. We watch Homeland and we listen to The National. Like, this is just what I'm supposed to do. And so I listened to like 3 or 4 albums, like every track, and was just like, nope. It's not for me. And it sucks because it's like, you don't feel above it. You feel like everybody else is a member of this like really cool club, and you're just sort of like, I'm not invited.
That's me. That's me in Game of Thrones, and me and Wilco.
I don't get Wilco.
No. Puts me to sleep.
I mean, so we
makes
all
makes me angry.
Yeah.
So we all have these things, and fortunately, Labyrinth. It was not an issue for me. I loved the movie. I loved it. And about halfway through, I think actually when Ludo shows up, I was like, "That's the pink elephant! Holy fuck! That's this! This is what I've been searching for!" It all makes sense.
And then they turn to you and pull you into the TV screen, and that's why you don't have a little brother anymore.
It was an amazing feeling. It was amazing to be like, oh, my memories were just like the scrambled eggs version of this sunny side up adventure.
I love when it happens.
Wonderful.
It's so
great.
It's so cool.
But yeah,
that's like why we do this, right? To be like, there was a pink elephant movie.
Oh, that
God,
was right.
Ludo.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I also bought The Dark Crystal that same day.
I've never seen it.
I've still never seen
that
it.
That one I am not crazy about.
Is there a rock person in it who helps a girl?
No.
Is Jonathan Brandis in it?
No.
Well,
Jonathan Brandis isn't in the Neverending Story either.
He's in a Neverending Story too.
Yeah. Electric Boogaloo,
which makes it my favorite Neverending Story.
But they,
is it a TOO?
They recast Atreyu, and I was just not okay with that.
Betrayed you.
Yeah, Neverending Story 2 is a really shitty movie. It looks like it's made for TV. It's really bad.
We should watch that again because I loved that movie.
2?
Just the second one?
Of course you goddamn did.
Both of them.
Jesus.
I loved both
Neverending
of them,
Story
though, 2 honestly.
Is the best Neverending Story.
No, I loved both of them, and I watched both of them probably about the same amount. I did not discriminate. And I was like, oh, different guy? I don't care. It's Jonathan Brandis. No big deal. What's his name? Jonathan Brandis. God, I wish there was an internet so I could find that person and look at him all the time. Nope, but just bought Teen Beat.
Say Tiger Beat.
Anyway.
So here we go. We just watched it with fresh eyes. So let's see how Labyrinth holds up. Well, for starters, we've got some cutting-edge CGI in these credits.
Does this count as animated credits? Was the first note I had?
I guess technically,
It's not the same spirit as animated.
You know what it reeks of is like, as whoever did the effects being like, we just figured out how to do reflections. So this owl's reflection is going to be all over the place. You know what was awesome was I on IMDb in the trivia, it says the owl in the opening credits was CGI. No shit.
Oh, really?
Did you know?
So I watched this. I watched this on Comcast on demand. Thank you, Comcast. But I did pay money, so you know you don't get a thank you. Never mind. I paid money for it.
Redacted.
Redacted. Thank you. Good day. And I watched it in HD. I could choose HD or standard. I was like, let's go. Let's pay the extra buck and watch the HD. I couldn't tell if this was just a really bad upgrade to HD. I was like, should not what is it. This?
You know, watch that in how it was meant to be watched. Like,
yeah. In the dark.
In the film projector, old man threading the film. Yeah.
I do keep an old man in the house just for that
particular Gene, I need you.
I'll be right there. Hold on. But yeah, I was like, is this just a really bad like HD conversion? Is the whole movie gonna look like this? I was so scared. And then I realized no, that's not a real owl.
No.
Yeah.
No. It's jarring. It's like when the stained glass thing comes to life in young Sherlock Holmes, where it's just like it was just too early. But everybody was so excited about
you can't help but
what CGI
it,
like, could do. At least they don't it's a real owl in the movie. Yes. Like it's just in these credits that it kind of they're sort of showing off this new technology at the time. New technology.
Yeah.
Sure.
So there's like the first David Bowie song playing over the credits. I have really mixed feelings about the Bowie songs in the film.
Mm. Are you? Let's just establish our levels of David Bowie fandom.
Okay. I mean, I actually really do like David Bowie quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And my issues with the music are not that I don't, it's not that like, oh, these songs are awful, although a couple of them are. It's that they don't fit with the movie. They're basically there because they cast David Bowie and one of the conditions was, and I'm going to write some songs for the film.
Yeah.
Lyrically, they very rarely have anything to do with what's going on. Mm-hmm. Sometimes lyrically, they seem awfully grown up for a kid's movie. And mostly just like in this one, it doesn't do a traditional score would have been better here to sort of introduce the tone of this movie and the world and everything. Like it's just a really strange.
I thought the baby had superpowers because of You Remind Me of the Babe.
That's my favorite song in the movie.
It's a good song.
Because it's the only one that it like feels like it's a part of the movie.
Right, but it's like the baby with a power. What? I was like, the baby has a power? That's amazing! What power does this baby have? Voodoo? What?
That's not true.
Voodoo.
He does not do that.
You do what?
I like David Bowie.
Remind me of the baby.
But I don't love David Bowie. I won't profess myself to be a Bowie fan because I've never gotten like that into Bowie the way that people get into Bowie. But he's always been around in my lifetime. He comes on and I'm like, oh man, this song is awesome. It's totally David Bowie. Like, I like David Bowie, but I'm not any kind of cultish Bowie fan.
Yeah, I don't want to oversell. Like I'm not.
Just want to say crazy that for the record.
Obsessive.
I dig Bowie. I don't know his whole catalog. I couldn't name three Bowie albums for you. I probably couldn't name one other than Bowieisms. But
I wouldn't have been able to name that one. I'm probably right around there. Yeah, I own a Bowie song, and it's on the Almost Famous soundtrack. And it's a good song, but I couldn't name you an album. I thought the episode of Flight of the Conchords, where there are all the different Bowies, was awesome.
That was really good.
But, I mean, I bet it was way more awesome to a real Bowie fan.
Yeah.
And I like Bowie in movies, though. I do like Bowie in movies.
Oh, yeah.
He's awesome in Zoolander.
Mm-hmm.
He's good in this.
Yeah, he is.
He's quite an icon. I mean,
I like David Bowie. I don't just like his music. I like David Bowie.
Yeah.
I think he's,
Iman. Great. Right?
He also played Tesla.
In
The Prestige.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That was good. Yeah.
It's The Prestige.
So many people hate that movie. I love that movie.
I feel like they didn't get it.
I love that movie.
Yeah, that's what I feel like.
It's confusing because it came out the same year as The Illusionist.
Which
like, maybe the same week as The Illusionist, so you don't even remember which one
it was
one
like
you
very
saw.
Similar times. Yeah.
But The Prestige had Kristen Bale in it, right?
And Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you actually had like.
That was the good one.
Mm-hmm. Those two movies between them had Wolverine, Batman, Black Widow,
Hulk.
One of the Hulks.
Yeah.
And
Jareth.
And Jareth and Alfred.
He's also in Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, You Remind Me of the Baby is a great song. But it didn't make any sense. I was like, I was waiting for the baby to have powers.
Dance,
I
thought, that's magic,
what,
dance.
I thought that's why he wanted the baby.
It has
baby.
The power to be hurled into the air and not die, awesome. Is what it had.
That baby was a shaking.
Okay, so, and then also moving through these credits, it says, you know, screenplay by Terry Jones, he of Monty Python fame. I don't know if you guys are aware of that. So he is credited with writing the screenplay, but there were actually a shitload of writers that came in and rewrote his script. His ideas for the script were actually really different. So he was adamant that Jareth, like the center of the labyrinth, not be revealed until Sarah actually reaches it. Mm-hmm. But once David Bowie was cast, there was like, well, we want to show him singing and dancing, and so we're going to keep cutting back to him. And da, da, da. And Terry Jones thought that was a huge mistake, that it like demystified the villain, and like the main hook of the film was sort of like, well, what happens if she makes it? And you got to, you know, you want to wait to see that rather than here's what you're working
here with all the dances.
Yeah, yeah.
I did find myself wondering, like, why does he even live there? Like, it sucks. Like, he's sitting at the window blowing out bubble balls.
Well, and then in the other, I think the other thing is, in Terry Jones' version of the script, the final confrontation between Sarah and Jareth, once she defeats him, he sort of, like, shrinks and shrivels down into a goblin. Mm. Which that's kind of a cool idea.
Makes sense.
Anyway, so.
I'll stay here and be David Bowie.
That's
what happens.
Oh man, there. Oh boy, there's gonna be some David Bowie Bane slash fiction at the end of this.
Oh
episode.
Yes.
I'll get a glass for you to do your Bane impression into. Oh, and then okay, so executive produced by George Lucas, which I don't know that I've ever noticed that before. He also apparently did. A rewrite on the script at one point, and then helped with like one of the first edits. You know what? So I was going to save this till later, but my least favorite scene in the movie is the dudes that take their heads off.
Oh.
Like that song and dance number is my least favorite part of the movie. And I was like, watching it, I was like, this is a fucking tribe of Jar Jars. Like, I bet this was George Lucas's contribution.
Yeah.
But that's probably unfair. I bet he had nothing to do with that scene.
I don't know.
Okay,
Lucas
so.
Lucas Museum is going to have a whole wing devoted to those guys and Jar Jars.
Those guys, at the end of that number, you totally see their puppeteers.
Do you?
Yes.
Like, well, I know the compositing in that scene is a real problem, and Henson hated it too. Like it was originally shot against a different backdrop, and then there was like something wrong with it, so they had to throw in this new forest backdrop. And Henson really, really did not like the way it turned out, but he felt that the puppeteers had done such good work that he wanted to leave it in the film.
The last shot of that. And I didn't rewind it because my 3-year-old was watching and I didn't want to point out that things are fake. Because I know that that's a problem for
good
some
call,
people.
Dad. Good call.
Yeah. Father's Day's
what
coming up.
What could go wrong?
Father's Day's coming up. I didn't want to ruin my present. So,
Johnny Five.
But the last shot of it, it's like, oh yeah, no, there's totally people in leotards.
Okay,
like,
wait,
I totally
so the
saw
last, the, are we talking, because the last time you see them is when she's climbing up the wall, when Hoggle helps her and their heads are still coming up. And then before that, it's her running through the forest and they're sort of popping out from behind trees.
No, there's,
it's actually creepy.
I think it's probably
shit.
Right at the end of the song, there's like one wide shot. And it's like, you're like, oh yeah, no, those are people controlling those. You can see them. Like, you can really see them. And that's probably why they had such bad composite shots, because there was no way to hide the people.
I didn't pay for the HD upgrade.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Oh, man, like, you can see the leotards.
Okay.
It's bad. And awesome. But they really did that, huh? It's almost like it's commenting on something, but it's not.
Nope.
They didn't have 10 minutes. All right, let's get to the beginning of this movie.
Okay,
guys.
So seamless transition into a real owl. Then we meet.
Seamless.
It is. It's the way the CGI owl flies this way.
Except for your own jarred senses. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, what? What is it?
Okay, so. And
Gene,
then...
what are you doing? We're not going to start yelling at Gene. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Karen.
Keep your patience.
Who the hell's that?
He's being Gene.
Who's Gene?
She's being Gene.
Who the fuck
Gene's
is Gene?
Gene's the old projectionist. Follow the story.
Lives in his house.
The old man that I keep to run the projection booth in my home.
Okay, so we meet Jennifer Connelly as Sarah. She's in this park performing a play called The Labyrinth. This was a cool fake out the first time I saw this, where it starts like she's a princess in like a fantasy, and then the reveal that she's holding, you know, the book, the play. She's just reciting dialogue from it. We see her dog.
Jeans on under that princess dress.
She certainly does.
The dog is named Merlin.
Merlin. Yeah.
That's important for one reason. Go on.
Okay.
Let you know what it's important.
Oh, you know what I like about Merlin is like, so he just barks. Like, he just, a normal dog thing, he barks, and she's like, oh, Merlin. Yeah.
What? Like, you're upset the dog barked? Do you know what dogs do?
You've had this dog, right?
But already, like, and then once we see her room, like, after she gets home, and I know I'm skipping the stuff for the stepmom, which I'm going to get to in a second, but the way you basically see the entire film in the contents of her room, we're already doing more effective line blurring than Hook with the whole, like, is it real? Is it a fantasy sort of thing?
It's very Wizard of Ozzy.
Yeah, totally.
Wizard of Ozzy?
She runs home in the rain. This is what I remember about, I remember showing this to my friend Mike after I had seen it again, like as a 20-year-old, being like, oh, you gotta check this out. This movie's awesome. And at this part, she goes running home in the rain. The Bowie song starts again. And Mike just looked at me like, what the fuck is this? Because the Bowie song just does not fit.
Neither does the rain. It's like, oh, it's 7 o'clock, and it's totally sunny out. She turns a corner, it's pouring rain.
It's not totally. It's overcast in the first scene.
It's not like. Going down. She runs over a hill, or runs over a bridge, and you see, like, the creek, and then all of a sudden, rain just starts falling on the
creek.
Maybe
she lives in Portland. That happens. Seattle?
Other cities where it rains, sure. Yeah, no, sure, yeah.
No, like a West Coast.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I get it.
This is where we're going. Okay. Bringing out the big guns early on Labyrinth. This isn't how weather works, you fucking idiot.
I'm just saying. It was like, why the rain? Why did the rain happen?
Yeah, no, that's true. It really does. The getting home because...
Like, you know what? This girl is so pretty. We should...
Get her wet?
Dump rain on her.
I mean, I don't mind. I had a huge thing for Jennifer Connelly for a long, long time. I mean, beyond just the fact that she, for a while, I thought she was pretty much the most perfect looking woman on the planet. But, like, also just that, like, I think she's Ivy League educated. She's really fucking smart. She made, this was, you know, the early 2000s, she was making all kinds of great choices as an actress. I was just like, who is this person? She was overwhelming. I was really, really into her.
Yeah.
I've got half a boner right now just talking about it.
I do not.
So that'd be impressive if you did. That'd be a neat trick.
But a bit about the rain.
Okay. So, more?
She's got to go into the house, right? She's got to go into the house. Stepmom's like, oh, no, the dog can't come in. Right? Dog can't come in because it's all wet. Right.
Sweatshirt Merlin.
Merlin is all wet. And Jennifer Connelly is like, go on, girl. Get into the garage.
I know.
Merlin's a girl? Wait a second.
Oh, I missed that.
Why name the dog Merlin?
I totally missed that.
That's the reason why
Merlin's a gender-neutral name. Right?
No, sir.
No. I mean, you can make it, I guess.
What I like is in movies when dogs speak fluent English, where it's like, go in the garage. Okay. Like, what?
Wait, did you want the two-car garage or the one-car garage next to it? The neighbor's garage?
Okay, so Sarah returns home. You know, the stepmom's waiting on the porch. Okay, so here's the thing that always bugged me about this movie. Sarah's a fucking brat.
Yeah.
Like, she...
Moody, poo-poo.
Her stepmom...
Good note.
Her stepmom is not that bad. Like, this isn't the Wizard of Oz where...
It's like, you were supposed to be here.
Yeah.
You aren't.
None of the demands placed on her are unreasonable. No. Her parents are actually pretty cool to her.
Yeah.
And, like, it's, you know, like, so I was going to say, it's not like The Wizard of Oz where, you know, the reality needs escaping or, I don't know. And the idea that she's trying to make her life fit into the mold of a fairy tale is sort of interesting. Like, when the stepmom says to the dad, no matter what I say or do, she always treats me like I'm a wicked stepmother in some fairy tale. That's kind of cool, but I don't know that the movie's necessarily, I don't know that it like kind of really commits to that.
There might have been a draft of it that did.
Yeah,
that
but it's not really,
lines, but yeah.
It's not really about that. And it's weird because the end of the movie would have you believe that what this was all about was her you know, no, as I'm saying this, I'm not even sure this is what's communicated. It feels like what it should be about is her realizing, oh, the real world is not so bad. Like, I've got it pretty good. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really do that. There's no acknowledgement of that, which is weird because there's that whole section of the movie, which we're going to get into because it's fucking bonkers, about taking things for granted.
Yeah.
But that doesn't come back.
Lessons she learns in this movie are effed up.
It's yeah.
Like, I take things for granted. Things aren't fair. What? What are you learning? Like, what is happening to you?
Yeah, so I have a problem with that. The fact that the beginning of this movie seems to want us to sympathize with Sarah, but she's a shithead.
Yeah, she's a total shit.
I find myself comparing this movie a lot to Pan's Labyrinth because of the word labyrinth.
Okay.
And like, because when I did a search for labyrinth, both movies showed up on Comcast. I was like, oh yeah, Pan's Labyrinth. Didn't even, you know, that would never have occurred, blah, blah, blah. But that movie, if I'm comparing, that is a reality to escape from.
Right.
It was like, you know, yeah. like a fascist dictator
Get
taking
me
over.
Out of
I
here.
Would rather mm-hmm. live in this, like, horrible, you know, like gruesome fairy tale
scary.
That I'm in. Yeah, scary, but it's better than
yeah.
real life. Her real life is fine.
Yeah. Cake.
They live in a 3-level, like, beautiful home in yeah. Portland or Seattle. And, I actually imagined it was
ways for her stuffed animals.
I imagined it was the same town from Hocus Pocus, actually,
oh, yeah.
which would be Salem.
Yeah, I was like, Salem.
New Salem. I don't remember what they named. Maybe there. Ice was her cousin.
Ice.
Ooh. But yeah, her life is nothing to be,
and that's why
to
if,
be evaded.
If the film had been about, you know, a sort of story where the protagonist is intentionally a little shitty because they have to go through, you know, they go on this journey and they wind up being a better person because of it. That would have been fine. It's just that there's, like I said, I mean, the filmmakers are clearly like coming at this from the point of view of like, oh man, right? Doesn't this suck? And it doesn't
yeah.
it doesn't at all.
Yeah.
So
I sort of liked that she started with moody moody poo poo, being a white girl whose life has not really ever been bad. Like you have bad days,
oh, no, it's
but
been
not
pretty
really.
Bad, Donna.
Shut up. but yeah, it can be an easy trap to fall into, especially when you're young, like early teens. And
yeah,
you just hate everything,
right?
And you're like, oh, stupid, I hate it. And I'm like, well, maybe there's gonna be a cod piece that comes to get you and shows you how bad things really are. Like, no, it's not very good. Like, probably keep your mouth shut and like
fear the dick.
If, your life
if
is
a
really
girls. Good. If a cod piece comes at
that
you,
would have been the best tagline for this movie.
Yeah, it's, you know, but she just kind of like is overreacting, and I think that is a nice lesson to be like, hey, you probably don't have it so bad.
And if
like,
the final scene had really hammered that home,
really,
I'd be
no.
fine.
But
with
the final scene,
with
the final scene does hammer home, and I know we're jumping around, but the final scene hammers home that I do need to escape from reality, guys. And
yeah.
you guys will always be there for me. No,
you know
were learning the whole time that reality isn't so bad.
And the fucked
yeah.
up thing is that she said it's like she doesn't even have a good reason for it. The line is something like, "I need you," and I don't know why. I just do.
Yeah,
that doesn't work
no.
for me.
No,
that's
no.
bad writing.
I need you, and it was like the tense of the verb didn't even make sense. Like, I will need you makes sense. Like, I will need you from time to time in my life. But she says, "I need you in the future." Basically, it's like you don't know that. Like, you've actually been. Maybe through this adventure, given some tools to cope with your not really bad existence.
Yeah.
Watch your bratty brother, who isn't all that bratty either.
He's just a baby.
She yeah. really hates things doing what things do. Like, she just...
Oh, Merlin.
Oh, Toby. Oh, the... Okay, so when she is at the crib and Toby's crying and she... says something about, you know, the goblins, and there's just that quick cutaway
yeah.
to the faces of the goblins. That, as a 20-year-old, that's when I was like, this movie's awesome.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like, that's
that
when
cool.
it had
yeah.
me. That's great.
That was cool.
She's
doing it, or something like that.
Yeah.
She's saying it.
And so, you know, the nice thing here is that, like, it gets the story moving instantly, but even still, you know, these first 10 minutes are sort of the weakest part of the film.
They were not interested in these first 10 minutes. It isn't until that moment with the goblins that they even remotely get interested in anything.
Right.
But when you have a crying baby, maybe don't recite a soliloquy from a made-up play. Maybe feed it or change it. Maybe he just wants to be out of the crib.
Any attention to
Pay literally some attention to that baby.
Because it needs a soliloquy. Yeah. It's not like, more soliloquies!
Oh, fine, Toby, fine. And then she walks out of the room! Pay the baby some attention! You're being neglectful. Your parents are horrible for leaving you with that kid.
Sarah sucks. The baby's crying. Like, you know, oh, Toby, stop it. Blah, blah, blah. She wishes that the goblins would take him away. And this is the first great sequence in the movie when, with the goblins appearing in the room, when she walks back in and the lights don't work and you're seeing like behind her, like the one leans into the doorway and then it cuts right away. Yeah. That's just, it's really, really great filmmaking at this part. And then, the owl flies in and turns into David Bowie.
He just comes right in, which is, I forgot that he's just like there. Right there,
yeah.
Which is unexpected and kind of exciting.
David Bowie shows up in your bedroom or your little brother's bedroom.
With a big fucking bulge, like standing over this crib. Well, back away, sir. That's the way love goes.
Let's dance.
So here, this is Jareth, the Goblin King. Did you guys, I don't know if you know this, that when he does those tricks with the crystal ball, that those aren't David Bowie's hands.
Cut away to his over shoulder.
But there's also shots like straight him where the guy is just, you know, he's got his
puppeteer.
Yeah. And his arms are around David Bowie and he's kind of doing it as if he's,
I wondered that because there were some shots but then there were so many over the shoulders it's not him.
Well, I mean, I think that stuff is, I like the way they do that. I like when the crystal ball turns into a snake and then he throws it at her and the snake turns into a scarf and then the scarf falls to the ground and there's a goblin wrapped up in it. It's just, it's so well done. Yeah. It's so, so awesome. And then like you mentioned when you were talking about your memories of the movie, I really like the transition into the fantasy land where she looks out the window and suddenly it's the Goblin Kingdom. And then when they cut back to, the angle is on her and Jareth. They're just there. Like they're just in that world now. I thought that was really, really cool. And this is also where I start to forgive the clunky start because I love this world so much. Yeah. And I'm sort of in the same boat as the filmmakers, which is just like, okay, fine. We need the setup. Like, you know, Dorothy's got to get to Oz and Sarah's got to get to wherever this is. And like, so it's, you don't have to put up with too much of it. This is clearly the part they were interested in. And
yeah, it was like 10 lines before that. Like, everything else was, the stuff we talked about so far has been like 10 to 15 lines of dialogue.
It's a shame that it's not a stronger start and more, you know, a more focused narrative, but it's still, I mean, it's ultimately pretty painless. Like they really get to this stuff pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, the dad probably got an Oscar, I think.
Oh, he
we worried about you.
Yeah.
I'll go see what's wrong with her. Sarah, we're leaving now. I mean,
that's you. Just I think you. That's more dialogue than he has in the movie.
I don't want to talk to you, Dad. Very well. I think that was it. I think that was his run in the movie. And then he leaves her alone, and she's like, "Oh, you really didn't want to talk to me, did you?"
Oh my god, what a big old bucket of crazy she is!
She is, she's gonna be a cray cray when she gets older. Like,
this reminds me of girls I dated in high school. Like when I was 16, this is the kind of
shit.
Don't
pay any attention to me. Pay more attention.
I have to say, as soon as she, you know, the whole arrangement with Jareth about, you know, I'm holding on to your brother, he's going to turn into a goblin unless you, you know, make your way through this labyrinth. I like, as she heads towards the labyrinth, her line is, well, come on, feet. I said that for years after I saw this.
And there's really no other way to go about it, I guess. You got to talk to your feet and make sure they're on board.
Come on.
What if they were like, no?
Yeah, it's going to be a real... In this reality,
crawl through this labyrinth. Even as a child, I had this issue with the labyrinth. The labyrinth as a whole. The walls are too short.
Oh.
Because the whole time I'm just like, just climb on top of the wall.
Oh, shit. And just walk over. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You dum-dum. You can see the castle from wherever you're at.
I myself thinking that. Yeah. Yeah. Like, well, can he climb over?
Like, mm-hmm. I don't understand all of the all the didgeridoo. That's not a real term.
A didgeridoo would have been so helpful.
Yeah. You just would have brought your didgeridoo.
I mean, I know I bring a didgeridoo whenever I visit a labyrinth. Oh,
truly, truly.
Maybe that was a never-ending story that they had a didgeridoo.
Yeah, I think that was. The Rock Monster played
didgeridoo. Didgeridoo. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what character I was supposed to be.
It's been a long time since I've seen that movie. Maybe he knows what he's...
Hey, did you bring your didgeridoo? Come on, Atreyu.
Bane?
Oh, bring more didgeridoo.
Okay, so
didgeridoo. Can you play this song on your didgeridoo?
Oh, man. Okay, so the next thing we see is Hoggle pissing in that pond and then killing fairies. I love the design of Hoggle. I really, really like this.
He reminded me of someone. And I don't know his name because I made him.
Great story.
I told myself I'd look it up because I don't know his name, but he's in a bunch of things. He's in Taxi, the show.
Judd Hirsch? Marin?
Yes, Judd Hirsch. He looks like Judd Hirsch.
Oh,
he looks exactly like Judd Hirsch.
It does.
I was like, why didn't they just get Judd Hirsch?
So he shows her how to get into the labyrinth. And I like, there's a part here when he's, you know, talking about the decision she's going to have to make. And are you going to go left? And are you going to go right? And it reminded me, I don't know if you remember this, Donna. So back when I worked at Starbucks, I was working with Lindsay one morning, and this guy came in and he was like, I'm looking for this place, and I know it's on Lincoln Avenue, and the store was on Lincoln Avenue, and he's like, I forgot the address, but he knew the name of the place. And Lindsay goes, well, based on the fact that I've never heard of it, I'd say you either have to go that way or that way. And she pointed left and right, and the guy looked at her like, okay. And then he looked at me, and I started laughing. I was like, Lindsay, what the fuck? What are you talking about?
Oh, man.
Based on the fact that I've never heard of it. Yeah.
That means it's not right here.
It's either not that this way or the other way. Move it along.
You fucking idiot.
I mean, my immediate reaction would have been, if only there was a series of computers connected to each other that share information. You know the name of the place. You know the general area or the street it's on.
I mean, this Google is before...
It's before, like iPhones and
like,
shit.
This
is, like,
the
2000...
The day before iPhones came out.
The day before iPhones?
Yes.
You had it logged in your diary? Yeah.
Okay, but this is also the part of the movie where we get the, you know, people telling her, oh, you take too many things for granted. But what the hell is Hoggle talking about?
Yeah.
He doesn't know her. What's he talking
about?
About
my life, Hoggle.
Yeah,
my
bitch, you don't
horrible.
Know my life. And then...
He cries.
My dog barks.
Wait, but then once she starts walking through the labyrinth and she has that moment of, well, there, you know, you can't turn anywhere. It just goes on and on, you know, this way and that way. And she says, oh, it just goes on. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe I'm just taking it for granted that it does. Again, what? What does it mean? What are you talking about?
You're using empirical evidence based on your eyesight and you've moved
it just,
through the space.
It feels like no one knows what this expression means. Like, it's like, maybe I'm just people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones that it does.
When in Rome.
Exactly.
I still don't quite understand that one.
So she meets that little worm person. And she, okay, so this is the first time I've ever noticed this. The worm said, she asks the worm, do you know the way through this labyrinth? And the worm says, no, I'm just a worm, which is great. I actually like that line. But You fucking liar.
Yeah.
Because she steps through the wall, which is another great moment of not realizing that it's not a wall, that she can get through it. That's a really cool illusion.
It wasn't a wall, it was a hallway, right? Or something like that. It was something, yeah.
But however they did that in-camera effect is really, really cool. And then, so she steps through it and she goes, oh, thanks. And she walks off. And then the worm says, ugh. If she'd gone that other way, she would have gone straight to the castle. Okay, so number one, you do fucking know the way through the labyrinth. And number two, what do you think her goal is?
Right?
Like, she's just gonna wander around like an asshole for all eternity? Maybe like, that's...
Maybe the worm doesn't know what a labyrinth is.
This worm's a real drippy penis. Like, I had a real problem with this worm this time.
Like, I actually enjoyed the actual effect of the worm. Like, I liked the worm puppet and I thought it was great. But the line, she would have gone that way. It's like, okay, that's just a writer being, you know, like, oh, I'm tricky.
Yeah, to get the audience to go, oh, no! Except that you started the scene with the worm going like, fuck if I know. Yeah. Except you could have just gone right there.
I was actually waiting for it to be a payoff of like, the worm kept inviting her to come in. I was waiting for her to like leave and then like for like the wall to open up or something and like lead straight that way or something like
okay.
that. Yeah. Not be like, oh, I actually did know where things are. I'm that stupid.
Doesn't make sense. Yeah. Time for a music number. This is the Remind Me of the Babe sequence. This is, like I said before, this is my favorite song in the movie.
It's a good song. Makes no sense, but
it's yeah, it's here just because it's David Bowie.
Yeah.
Is it that, I mean, because there's still this attitude that if it's a kid's movie, it needs songs. Like, that still happens. So maybe that informed this.
Is this a kid's movie?
Yeah, I think it plays I think it would play best as, you know, if you were 10, 11.
Well, first of all, just like the palette of the movie, it's very like drab colors.
It really is, yeah.
It's not a kid's movie color scheme.
And the monsters aren't like fuzzy and cuddly. They're like,
not all.
Well, I mean, they're straight up goblins. Yeah. Yeah,
some of them are just like
they're scary. Oh,
that's creepy. Yeah. Well, I mean, also, that was also a period of time that movies were less afraid of scaring children. They kind of wanted to scare kids, which is commendable. But yeah, I there was even a couple language things. It was like, oh, maybe like someone said damn or something. I was like, that's not a kid's movie thing.
Oh,
that's not
Hoggle. Like, he does say Hoggle. Oh, damn you, Jareth, and damn me too. Yeah. I actually like that line.
So do I. But I don't know that plays in a, like, I'm not, if I took my 5-year-old to see a movie, And that's happening. Like, maybe this wasn't a movie to bring my 5-year-old to. I mean, a 10-year-old, yeah, but does a 10-year-old need music?
Yeah. Right.
I feel like it was just, it was mismatched.
I thought, in watching it with all the music, I sort of thought, like, oh, is this because of music videos that we're still trying to, like, figure out how to play this? And, like, so music videos are great in MTV, but what if we made a whole movie with David Bowie and puppets?
Like, I mean, okay, so...
Sort of felt
I wonder if that is the music video.
I don't know if this is on MTV. True or not, but I read somewhere that... In addition to David Bowie, the other people considered for the role of Jareth, they were musicians. Like Michael Jackson's name was thrown in there as a possibility. So, I mean,
Michael Jackson stealing a baby?
I mean, oh boy.
Yikes.
They seemed pretty resolute about. Yeah.
Making a musical.
Yeah. And I don't think the movie needs it. I actually think it would be a better movie without the songs, like just for the things you were talking about, like the more ominous aspects of it, I think play a little bit better without it because it does make Jareth seem a little less formidable if like, you know, oh, you can't have your brother back.
Why can't I have him back? Because you remind me of the babe.
Oh, did you guys know that David Bowie is the one doing the voice of the baby in that song? Like when he goes, and the babe says, and then it does
the babe says,
no, there are baby noises in the song, and that's apparently David Bowie.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so Sarah meets I don't even know what to call these things, like the four dog-like creatures that are guarding those two doors, one's coming up. There's like behind the shields.
Yeah.
And there's one head coming out the top and another coming out the bottom. Yeah, exactly. One always tells the truth. The other always lies. She can only ask one of them a question. I still don't get this, like, her train of thought here. When she explains, okay, like, so one oh, door, but if he... Okay, yeah,
one
go
door
ahead.
Leads on the way.
Yeah.
And one door leads to certain death, I think is what they say, right?
Yes.
And one can... One always lies, and one always tells the truth.
Right.
And so she asks one, would the other one tell me that that door leads to the castle, right? And the dog horse thing, like, looks like consults with himself, like, drops his head down. Yes, that one would, is what he said.
Yeah.
He says yes. And so she says, if he says that, then I'm going to go to the other door.
Wait, but she goes through the door.
But she does say, I'll go through the other door. That's what she said. And so I was, I'm not explaining this. I'm telling you this is my confusion.
Oh.
It's like, she said she was going through the other door.
Fuck,
she
I thought we were getting answers. I was so excited.
I mean, I could figure it out for you, but we probably need to stop this for a second.
No, it's not worth it. Write in, please.
The one who's in, yeah, no, we get it. We get it. I mean, we get it.
I'm it's sure it like a, makes a sense. It's I'm sure like it
the,
makes sense.
There's the one of the Pirates of the Caribbean sequels where they're playing a game called Liar's Dice.
Yes.
And they don't explain the rules to you, but for like maybe 13 seconds, and you're supposed to understand the huge the stakes, implications yeah, yeah, and yeah. stakes of this game. Like, I don't understand what's happening, but I guess
I mean,
he lost.
It's so quick. This happens so quick in the movie that you kind of get like a little bit of whiplash of like, what? Okay, fine. The movie's just going on without me. Oh, like, I'm either on board with this or I'm not. So I'm just like, I'm sure whoever wrote this thought it through. I'm sure it makes sense. I just don't understand the specifics of this. It just happens a little too fast. But so she walks through one of the doors, falls, gets groped by the Blue Man group on her way down.
I think this is my favorite part of the whole
thing. This is awesome. This is in my notes. This is why I love this movie. It's like now we're hitting the part where it's just one sequence after another where you go like, oh man, this is so cool.
Yeah, the helping hands are awesome.
Fucking great.
And there was something I didn't remember going into it, but once I saw it, I was like, oh my God, I loved this as a child, like seeing like the different faces and the mustaches moving. Oh,
yeah.
It was so great.
It's really well done.
Yeah, you could tell like this is a puppeteer's, like a circus person's movie. They love, you know, like this stuff.
There's a lot of like old fashioned like sleight of hand and in camera tricks in this that I thought were it's all really
felt,
well done.
It felt like there was a lot of collaboration between like the puppeteers. The Muppeteers, whatever. Sorry, not whatever. Don't write back Muppeteers, all of you who listen to us. It felt like they were like, and we could do this in this, you know, in this scene, and we can, you know, do that. And the helping hands, I thought that was like one of the most imaginative things. For sure.
So she falls all the way through there, winds up in this oubliette, which is a place that you put people to forget about them. Hoggle shows up. I wish they didn't tell you he's about to betray her. Like, I kind of wish it had just been revealed that he stabs her in the back. Cause it's like, it cuts to David Bowie, who's like, hold on, he's gonna lead her back to the beginning of the maze, and then she'll, you know, what? So Hoggle helps her escape. The talking statues were a great touch. That to me feels like I don't know if Terry Jones wrote this scene, but I kind of think he didn't. I read that the poisoned orange or tangerine or whatever it is the only thing from his script that's still in there.
Wow.
Because this to me does feel sort of like a Monty Python-esque.
It's very, but I've been waiting for...
I never get to say it. Yeah. It's like, all right, say all right, it, but fine. Don't expect a big reaction. No, of course.
Yeah,
like,
that's very, very Monty.
So, and then Jareth appears in the tunnels here. He throws that crystal, which turns into the nightmare spike machine that almost runs them over.
That would have been a quick movie. And then they died.
Yeah.
And then that baby became a goblin. The end.
And then
And those parents went out every night after that. They had no children.
They escape from the oubliette. They're back in the labyrinth. This is where we meet Ludo. These growling sounds need work. It just it sounds like a dad and like a Casio microphone, like with it fooling around with his kids. It just really doesn't work that well.
Yeah.
But the thing about Ludo I liked is, even though this is clearly just a dude in a suit, because he doesn't have human proportions, because it's more ape-like with the really long arms and everything, it works really well. And then I like all the little soldiers, those with like the even smaller creatures attached to their staffs.
The little bitey guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was just really impressed by all this.
I mean, it's really cool, but it worries me in my head.
Well, I mean, the movie shows you the pitfalls of using such a weapon.
If you're an idiot, it totally screws you.
I'm actually a
helmet that blocks your vision.
I'm going to jump ahead to the "Don't lose your head" sequence, which we've already mentioned a little bit. I don't like these things. I don't like this song. I don't like this green screen effect.
I actually like the song.
Really?
But again, I don't think that it fits it. I think it fits the story more than Remind Me of the Babe.
My problem with it is that the lyrics are nearly impossible to understand.
Yes.
I have no idea what the words to this song are.
I just like the music of it. I thought it sounded good.
I watched it with subtitles and I still don't know what the words were.
And I didn't know if they were good or bad when it was happening. Because they were just like causing mischief, I guess.
Once it gets to the part where they're like, now we're going to pull off your head, and they start chasing her. I remember being freaked out the first time I saw this. I mean, when I was 20, like the first time I retained like memories of it.
Yeah.
It was unnerving. It was like, fuck these things. Are you kidding me?
And then they show up in the bedroom at the end.
I
will need you all, except for you guys. Wait, what are you doing here?
You can
pull off your head.
No. Very troublesome.
Yeah.
I really liked their, like, moves.
Yeah.
Their, like, dancey moves.
I find them so creepy.
In the beginning of the song, I was like, I don't know what these guys are, but I dig their moves. And then they got scarier and scarier, and I was like, I care less about your dance moves.
But like at the beginning of it, I was like, I really enjoy the way they move, because it's a very like very strange,
lanky,
like,
and
yeah,
and googly arms.
But you're immediately thrown off by how bad the composite.
It's the most jarring effect in the movie,
and it's totally to hide the puppeteers, because again, in the HD version, the last shot, you're like, oh, they're just standing right on top of them. It's not like they're not like hiding out of, they're like controlling them like this. That's why they do that. Like,
they're dude smoking a cigarette.
They're basically exoskeletons. It's great.
So speaking of the Bog of Eternal Stench, that's Hoggle rescues her from these creepy dudes. That's where they wind up next. This is my personal favorite scene in the movie, because it's literally a lake of buttholes farting. What's not to love about this? So we meet Sir Didymus, who won't let them cross the bridge to escape. Eventually, you know, they get his permission. So the thing is, like, so to get out of this bog, those rocks rise up from it, and you walk across the rocks. Every time a foot touches a rock, you get that noise. So when the dog goes, when Didymus runs with the dog over the rocks, and all four paws are hitting it, and it's just like. I am uncomfortable with how long I laughed at that. I timed it. I laughed for 94 seconds after that happened.
That's ridiculous.
That's awesome.
It's so funny.
I thought that the ability of the pink elephant to summon rocks
weird
was gonna come back.
It does. That's how they saved the day.
I thought it was just gonna come back like more.
More? That's how they win the final battle.
I was like, I needed more rocks. I was waiting for the Rock Man to come. You have to understand. I thought he could talk to the Rock Man.
When that giant suit of armor comes out of that wall at the end, if then they'd summon like a rock dude.
A giant rock fighter.
It was ripe.
It was ripe?
For it.
Oh,
for
okay.
A rock monster.
I understood what you meant.
Yeah.
Actually, when that big suit of armor thing comes, I thought I remembered, what's the little guy who rides the dog?
Didymus.
I thought I remembered his head getting cut off, but like it not affecting him. Like it was like, oh yeah, just put it back on. Like I just thought, like I was like, oh yeah, they're gonna cut his head off. It's gonna be like traumatic. it's going to be traumatic for a second until you realize that that's totally okay in this world. But no, that didn't happen. So I was like, oh, there were stakes there. I did not realize. He actually cared if his head got cut off.
He's a lot like us in that way.
Indeed.
Is Didymus's dog Ambrosius?
It's Merlin. It's the same dog.
Ambrosius.
But it never barks out of turn.
No.
Not in this fantasy world.
It's the good version.
This is the good world.
So you can go back to your real life and be like,
your farty butthole lake, but this is the good world.
I was expecting her to be like, oh, Merlin. Like, I thought Merlin came in after her.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no.
I like how, I mean, you guys must have noticed that it's certain shots where even the dog is a puppet. Yeah. And it just kind of cuts back and forth between.
I actually loved any time the dog was a puppet.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, Jim Henson puppet dogs in general, like the one from Fraggle Rock, I'm a big fan of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or like Bunny, remember Tale of the Bunny Picnic? There's a dog in that who, like, his dialogue is like, bark, 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 oh, bark. It's so good.
I love speaking from experience and real life animals. Like, I had a bunch of stuffed animals and, like, trying to make your cat walk around with, like, a little rider.
It's
hilarious. Yeah.
There's a chihuahua living in my house right now, squatting. And my kid puts a little Tweety Bird, the Tweety Bird from Star Wars.
Yeah, that's awesome.
She's like, the dog's name is Roxy. Like, Roxy's, Birdie's riding Roxy. And she's like, chases it's Roxy delightful. Around the house. Yeah.
It's delightful. Yeah, it's always loved it.
Because I think that's great. That dog needs to do something. Entertain my kid.
Carry this bird around.
Yeah.
Okay. So Hoggle gives Sarah the poisoned fruit, and then we get that strange dream sequence drug trip.
She's tripping balls.
How about her fantasy is Eyes Wide Shut?
This feels like padding to me. Like, this, it adds nothing. Like, the story picks up right where it left off before this started. I've never been a huge fan of this sequence. I mean, Jennifer Connelly looks amazing in this scene.
Oh, the big prom dress. That's
when her hair's all done.
There was even like a shot of her.
Those sleeves are so big.
There was a shot of her. It was like a reflection of her. I was like, that's what she looks like now. Like the reflection looked like,
today Jennifer.
Yeah, Connelly. Will look like actually more like 30-year-old Jennifer Connelly. Mm. But I was like, yeah, how did they do that? Like, they knew what she was going to turn out to look like.
Okay, let's get through the last part of this movie here. So Sarah lands in that junkyard after she gets out of her dream sequence. She meets that trash lady, thinks she's back home, realizes, no, you're still in the junkyard.
Is the junkyard part of the labyrinth?
Yeah,
this is what messes me up about the labyrinth is you see the labyrinth at the beginning and it's like a straight maze.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's a forest.
Right.
And you're like, are they still in a labyrinth or are they out like outside of the labyrinth now? And then they're in the junkyard and like, okay, are they even in the same city anymore?
Well, it's magic.
Well, the other thing too is, so.
And you see, and you're told the castle is beyond the Goblin City. So I'm thinking the castle is outside of the labyrinth.
Because thought it just meant once you reach the Goblin City, once you get through there, it's sort of.
But then the Goblin City is also part of the labyrinth?
It's the center of the labyrinth, yeah.
Okay.
And so, and apparently this junkyard thing at one point was intended to be this whole separate town within the labyrinth. Like there was, like Hoggle went to go get a drink at a tavern in there before he went to rescue Sarah. But anyway, so
I love that scene.
The junkyard scene?
Yeah. Oh, I think that's such cool imagery. You could make a short film just on that and like how easily she tricks her into going into her own room and then like starts immediately like bundling her down all of her belongings and garbage.
Yeah. Anyone's like, why don't you come in here? Like, don't go in there.
Don't, the answer is no.
Come on,
I know why. Because you're up to no good. Because
you're evil laughing in my face.
Elsewhere.
At least wait till I go in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Sarah,
that was great imagery.
Yeah.
Sarah remembers her mission and gets on with it. Her and the rest of her crew, they reach the gates of the Goblin City. This is another thing I love the look of. Like, I like this city. I would live here if it weren't filled with goblins.
That's what I say about Chicago.
Well, you do live here.
Maybe I'm a goblin.
In spite of the goblins.
You remind me of the babe.
What babe?
Not doing it.
You fuck. Okay, so...
I tell lies. Or the truth. I don't know. Which version of the script are we in?
Okay, they fight their way to the castle, and there's that confrontation with Jareth, which is like straight out the M.C. Escher thing with the suit. Also very cool. Mm-hmm. And then there's that callback to the opening speech she made in the park, and that's how she defeats him, which is kind of, I don't really understand how that works, but I don't really understand how a lot of this works. So okay.
It doesn't.
She returns home. Toby's back in his crib. The parents return. Everyone shows up to party.
Honey, we're home.
Yeah. This is weird, and this might be hard to explain, because either all of this was real, and mom and dad are going to be like, do you hear something? Or it's a fantasy.
And she's crazy.
Yeah, and your daughter's dancing around, talking to no one. Nuts. Making toasts to imaginary friends, greeting cards and toast.
I mean, she definitely becomes a Wiccan. Right? I mean, she's that girl. Right?
Oh.
And...
Well, so here's the thing. If this was all...
I just pictured Donna. A toast!
Yeah.
To the goblins! And your parents outside the room like,
oh, God.
You gotta take her to see that movie, but she's not ready.
It's fine.
Just let her go. Let her go to Chicago.
If this... What I like
the
is
Goblin
that...
City.
She'll if, blend in, I guess.
If this was a dream, if this whole thing was a dream, it's... funny that it was basically her subconscious going like, you're kind of a shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't you work on that?
Yeah, look around you. Turn on the news every once in a goddamn while. Things are not bad for you, sister.
Okay, so final thoughts on Labyrinth, Donna.
Whoa, Labyrinth.
Is that that's the movie we watched?
That's it, yeah.
That's it.
That's it. I mean, there. You know what a movie, and it's good, and you can watch it.
That
know?
Is true of most movies. I find
it's you can watch them. You can be an attorney. You if can. You, want to.
You do have the right to be an attorney.
You go to school and stuff for it. I think it's good. No, I do think it's good. And it. Doesn't necessarily, yeah, I have no nostalgia for it because it was not a part of my childhood, but I don't really think that that matters so much because it is really cool and mm-hmm. it is really well done. And it really doesn't matter to me that most of it doesn't make sense because I'm so intrigued by the puppeteer work and the world that this exists in and David Bowie and magic. And it just is enough that it doesn't matter if not all of it makes sense. I immediately don't care if it makes sense because I'm so wrapped up in what's coming through my eyeballs. It's like, what? It doesn't even matter. Yeah, it's great. Take your 10-year-old to see it.
But not your 4-year-old.
You're gonna spend all day answering questions that you don't know how to answer. I feel like if you take a real child to see this, it's gonna be a whole story. And you're gonna have to make it up as you go along, and then you're gonna have to remember what you're
telling.
Did
you say if you take a real child to go and see this?
Take a wooden child. But if you take a real child, they have questions. Wooden children are very accepting.
This is very problematic.
Plastic children, on the get right out. That's not happening.
On the toes of your toasts to no one, I'm a little worried about the implications here.
I just mean like a real child, like a real young child is what I meant to say.
I took an imaginary child to see Silver Linings Playbook, and they didn't understand.
A 10-year-old is a child, certainly.
They sold me a ticket, but they gave me a really judgy look.
Damn it.
They said bless your heart, which I thought was really nice, but apparently just means you're crazy.
Oh. Carlos, final thoughts.
My final thoughts are I wish Jim Henson had directed more movies before this. This felt like... You know how sometimes you'll see a movie from a director that almost feels like they're practicing.
Yeah.
For another movie. Like Robert Rodriguez does this. Like the Spy Kids movies were basically practice for other movies, like action-y movies he wanted to do with special effects, right? So yeah, I felt like either there should have been more movies leading up to this, or there should have been a movie after this that was like, if you liked Labyrinth, you'll really love
right.
Plabyrinth.
It is. It's really unfortunate that this put him in such a funk that it was kind of like, well, that's it. And there were just no other... He never directed another movie. That's a shame.
It is.
Because I still love this movie. I do. I love it a whole lot. Sarah is way too much of a poopy diaper for the first 10 minutes. Or how did you put it?
She's moody poo-poo.
She's a moody, moody poo-poo for sure. But
for sure.
But once we're in the fantasy world, you know, the movie finds its footing. And I think it stays strong right up until we get back to the real world again at the end. I liked that it's a contained location. Like, the scope of it is not huge, but there's such variety in the visuals. Like, some of what you were talking about before, about, like, I mean, you were talking about you're not understanding how this labyrinth works, and, like, now we're in a forest, and, you know, da-da-da. But I, just as far as, like, the palette goes, like, I do, it does feel like we go on a journey. It feels like there's a lot that we go through with these characters, and I really dig that part of it. This always makes me wish there had been more live action puppet hybrids. Like, there's not enough of these. And I know there was that movie Mirror Mask in 2005. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that. That actually, no, that was Neil Gaiman and Dave McKeon.
Oh,
and it started as a sequel to Labyrinth, and then at a certain point they said, why don't we just do something sort of in the vein of Labyrinth, like a spiritual sequel, not a direct sequel. And so that's how Mirror Mask started. But yeah, so that's where I'm at with Labyrinth. You guys want to play Two Truths, One Lie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh man, for this movie?
Okay.
Do you always tell the truth or do you always lie?
All right, here we go. Two Truths, One Lie for Labyrinth. Two truths and one lie. Number one. Many recognizable names auditioned for the role of Sarah, and among them Jane Krakowski from 30 Rock, Ally Sheedy, and Maddie Corman were considered the frontrunners until Connolly was cast. Number two.
They were the front runner, so we cast Connelly.
Well, until he met with Jennifer Connelly, and then it was like, no, this is the
girl. I'm a front runner. Well, actually, we just cast Connelly. Because I'm not a front runner anymore.
You're a loser.
Number two. One of the earliest versions of the script had a 12-year-old Sarah entering the labyrinth to find her father, and at the time, the plan was to have the same actor who played her dad also play the Goblin King. Oh. And at the end, the whole thing is revealed to be a dream whose purpose was to help Sarah accept her father's death and work through her grief. And Henson liked this, but felt it was too dour, like the Dark Crystal had also turned out much heavier than he had anticipated. And so he was determined to make Labyrinth a little lighter and more fun. So it was back to square one with the plot. And number three, although there is no film sequel to Labyrinth, a follow-up does exist in the form of a four-part manga series titled Return to Labyrinth. And that story follows a grown-up Toby as he travels back to the Goblin City. Which one was the lie?
I say the first one was a lie.
I think so, too.
Krakowski.
I just want the other two to be true.
So the second one was the lie.
Damn you.
Oh,
yeah.
That sounds so cool.
It's a much better version of that story.
Those actresses...
It's heartbreaking.
Those actresses were the frontrunners for the role. And then, yeah, there is the manga series, the sequel, you can find that. Apparently,
what is a manga series?
It's like Japanese comics. Comic books. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a different format.
I just asked that to make our listeners feel better. The ones
that's very
that
nice
don't
of you.
Know. Yeah.
I mean, Donna knows.
Oh, I mean, we get it.
I mean,
we get it.
Apparently, there's also, I know it was announced, I don't know if it's since come out, but there was some comic book company that was working on a prequel comic to Labyrinth. So that exists or is going to exist.
I was about to say they should just make a sequel, but it would be directed by Tim Burton, and that would make me angry.
I think, you know, the charm of this movie, though, one of its charms is how, aside from the shitty CGI owl, it's all practical. It's all tactile. Yeah. And if they did something like this now, like Mirror Mask, I remember having way too much CGI in it. Like, yeah. It really isn't the same.
No.
I feel like...
You can't beat a puppet.
I beat a puppet. I have beat many a puppet in my day.
Beat a puppet, but was it fine?
There was one puppet that owed me $12,
and it got beat. And it was fine after that. It was no problem.
Donna's right; it would survive.
I took his head off.
No difference to that puppet. Yeah. What you did or didn't do.
I took that wooden boy to the movie. I didn't ask me no questions. Anyways, that was weird.
Yeah, got a little weird. David Bowie, what time is it?
It's time to play
David Bowie. What time is it?
It's time to play Who Would You Be and Who Would You F?
You made F a three-syllable word.
Shameful. I'm sorry.
No, it was good. It was great. Oh, my God.
A, B, C, D, E, L, F, G, H, I.
Okay, so here's my idea for this version of Who Would You Be, Who Would You Be?
We all say Jennifer Connelly.
No, we got to take Bowie and Jennifer Connelly out of the equation.
Oh, man.
So that's where we're at.
This is a big deal.
And if we want to start with Donna, I said, what did I say? What did I write here? Okay, Donna. Donna would be Hoggle? I don't know why. I'm so sorry. Why would I write that? Donna would be Hoggle.
Tricky guide.
I wrote, and you would F. I'm so sorry for this. The Helping Hands.
<That's> terrible.
Okay, you would be the stepmom.
Oh, okay.
And well, you would F.
Elf.
You would elf. You wouldn't have the dad, because, I mean, Jesus Christ. I'll see if she's all right. Are you all right? Okay. My role is done. You would elf. I mean, Hoggle? I mean, like, yeah. Judd Hirsch is a good-looking man.
He's a character. So, you're both wrong. I would be Didymus.
Mm. Oh.
He's adorable, and he's got a dog horse. I love it. It's a good time. And I would F Ludo.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean,
he's gonna split you in half. What? I mean, yeah.
Not as Didymus.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
No,
I realize.
Hey, I mean,
he's friendly.
It's about right. You know,
there's a lot of uncomfortable imagery. I mean, it's my fault.
Yeah, you did make this.
Because my original choice before I knew these rules was to be Bowie and F Bowie as Bowie effing Bowie.
Oh, I mean, everyone's had
that. What does that sound like? I'll look away.
Oh. It's terrible. It's the worst I've ever done.
Elf! Do you like the way I elf you? I love the way you elf me.
I love your eyeshadow.
Again, don't you feel like he was already dressed that way?
Yeah.
We're just start rolling. He's not going to change into the costume. Like, they had like a goblin mask for him, ready to go. Like, we did not.
No, I'm ready.
I would elf me. Shoot.
Iman, my codpiece.
Okay. Helping hands, my codpiece. And then it comes.
They're very touchy, I'm just saying.
This is a doozy.
Okay, so who would Carlos be? Who would Carlos F? I said Carlos. Originally, I said Carlos would be Ludo. Mm. But then I decided maybe the bird that lives on top of that old guy's head. Yeah. Because he just gets to like make snarky comments.
That's a good choice.
All day.
That's a good choice.
And I
didn't even feel that dagger go in my back.
That's not... No.
That way in the front.
You just get to be snarky all day.
To make funny...
To sit in his ivory tower and be snarky.
What's wrong about that?
No, that's legit. That's totally legit.
And okay. I said you would...
It would have the guy the bird sits on, because let's be sure he's doing it already.
It's convenient. It's practical. Yeah. Sure. I said you would F the worm. Is it a male or a female? I don't even know.
It's a male, and he has a wife. He's married.
Well then you...
Yeah, he's like, come on in and meet the missus.
Oh, that's right. Oh. Then you would F Mrs. Worm. In front of Mr. Worm.
Oh. Cold-blooded.
Cold!
Because what's he going to do? He's a worm.
He's a worm. Okay.
Donna, who would Carlos be?
I think that Carlos would be the contrary fellows that are like the card guards.
I like card guards. We should have
called them guards. Yeah, the card guards.
I always lie and I always tell the truth, or maybe not, depending on which door you choose.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you'd be a tricky one like those fellows. And I feel like there aren't really many lady puppets.
There's the junkyard lady.
So I guess you would have the junkyard lady.
Oh.
Or maybe there's a Mrs. Hoggle.
I doubt he's in a relationship.
He's probably not. He doesn't seem like he's in a good place.
Anyone else felt like he was going to get kissed at the end and be made into an actual prince?
Oh, no. What?
No.
What?
No, I didn't feel like that.
Because he said, and Hoggle, and he like turns around, if she kisses you, I'll turn you into a prince. And then he adds on like, of the bog of eternal.
Yeah.
But it was like, I thought maybe he was going to turn into an actual prince. Like, why else would that line be in the movie? And it's actually for no reason.
It's just to get them to the bog of eternal stench.
But they've mentioned it by that point 3 times.
Yeah.
But they get there by her kissing him.
Well, maybe she had to kiss him on the dick.
Come on!
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Ladies, well, tell your daughters that's not part of any fairy tale. That's not it. I thought you would turn into a prince. Oh, no, no. You had to kiss me on the dick.
Make me a prince, baby.
No, madam. No.
Oh, boy.
I'm royalty.
Certainly not.
I would be Pink Elephant. And yeah, I think I would F the dog. But to be fair.
This is a stupid question.
But to be fair, Merlin's a girl. So.
Yeah. All right.
Ludo?
This is probably irrelevant. The puppet dog or the real dog?
I wanted to ask the same
thing. Relevant. Puppet dog.
Puppet dog.
That somehow is okay. I'm fine with it.
It's totally okay because that puppet dog makes horse noises. Did you hear that?
Yes, it does. Well, and for the same reason Donna thinks it's okay to beat puppets, you know, that they get up, they walk away from that shit, whatever. You could do anything to that. Here we go. So, moving on.
Son of a gun.
Who would I be and who would I... Yeah.
Okay, let me focus here.
I think you would be Ludo.
Okay.
And I think you would Eolf the fairies from the beginning, the ones who bite. So you're not mouth-effing them, but you're V-effing them.
God damn it.
Thank you for specifying.
I mean...
Safety first. Okay, I think you would be Toby.
There are other people in this movie.
And you would F Didymus.
As Toby.
They're compatible sizes.
One and a half year old baby.
Okay.
Snuggle the poop out of you.
Just all the poop right
just
out my butt.
Screw your ear right off.
Okay. Karen.
Gene?
Snugging me so hard, poop came out.
That was real.
Oh, God.
If he was...
Oh, God. No.
A real man will squeeze so hard you poop.
Karen.
I wear a diaper to bed now.
Oh!
This doesn't make sense. Okay.
Good kick, Jeffrey. Good kick. Go back to the middle of the field, honey. Heard something it wasn't supposed to hear.
Did you already guess for Chris?
I feel like I did. They said you'd be a fairy.
Oh, yeah, you'd be a fairy. I would be Sir Didymus. And I would F the trash lady, I guess. I mean, I'm wearing a condom, let's be clear. Because we don't know where she's been. We do know where she's been. She's been in the fucking junkyard.
Everywhere,
so we know exactly where she's been.
Everywhere. Yeah.
But there just aren't a lot
she
of.
She can stalk your nightmares, which
there
is.
Aren't a lot of. Well, okay, remember in the one episode where I said that thing about, like, things that, like, were so scary or grotesque, I just wanted to, like, fuck them.
Yeah, I do remember that.
So maybe.
It didn't make any sense.
I'm so glad I'm calling back to that, but that maybe there's a little of that going
remember
on.
Remember who I am?
Remember that? I'm this guy.
You know how you would move to Han?
I'm the guy who fucks terrible things till they don't scare me anymore. That's what I do.
You're the worst Ghostbuster.
That was almost Rey.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. That is it for us, guys. If you're a fan of the show... Wait.
You're not anymore.
Yeah. Let me start that over. Because I said that as a... I said, that's it for us, guys. Not Donna. Donna's going to keep going.
All right, hold on. I will.
If you're a fan of the show, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher if you haven't already. Like our Facebook page to find out what we're looking at next and who we've offended this week, and to share your own memories of these films. Let us know if you have suggestions for other titles we should revisit, and we'll see you next time.
To the labyrinth.